What's up, everybody? Welcome in for another edition of the Half Court Press. I'm John Niatawa. He's Chris Hetty. And apparently you got a lot of stats for me.
I have a lot
I'm
of
eager
stats.
To consume these stats.
Nebraska's the best team in college basketball. Did you know that?
According to who?
Jerry. Is it Jerry? Sagan? Sagan?
The Jeff Sagarin?
Jeff Sagarin, yeah.
Jeff Sagarin. His computer rankings? I actually like those computer rankings a lot. I reference them pretty often when I do my polls.
Yeah, Nebraska's atop them. Nebraska's not in the AP poll, but they are number one on that poll.
On the Sagarin rankings.
Obviously, Nebraska's 2-0. They beat Mississippi Valley State, who is the worst basketball team I've ever seen in my life. And I played sophomore basketball. Right. Actually, I played freshman B basketball. They were like Shawnee Mission North freshman B team. I mean, that bad. And
they will be in the bottom 300.
They are in the bottom 300
already. Yeah, but they'll stay there.
And then Southeastern Louisiana is also in the bottom 300.
Yeah,
Nebraska beat both of those. So
So I guess we'll start by saying the opponents were inferior, and it's obvious. But
Nebraska
did some things that you don't see Nebraska doing. When I saw those scores, I was like, it was eye opening because for the past, I don't know, decade plus, Nebraska has played these teams that you would think on paper, oh, they'll be fine, and suddenly it's a 2-point game with 3 minutes left.
Right.
So,
And Tim Miles, first off, Tim Miles kind of mentioned that too, of like all of a sudden, you know, you're up 16-17, and then you kind of get sleepy, and all of a sudden it's like a 2-possession game, and it's like, okay, now I have to play even harder, and we don't need to be doing this. That didn't happen. So, Nebraska's averaging 96 points per game, holding teams 36 points per game. They're shooting 55% from the field while holding teams to 22% from the field and 12.5% from three. They've got a +9 turnover, and there's 1.7 assists per turnover. And Brady Hyman is leading them in rebounds with 9 per game.
9 per game. That's really good. Okay.
And Glenn Watson leads them with 17.5 points per game. But it's just really fun to see 60.5 margin of victory.
Right.
You don't see that very often.
And I think you wrote that it was the first time, since 2001 that Nebraska's dropped 50
in the first half.
In two games in a row,
yeah.
There's reason. I mean, I know a lot of Nebraska fans are excited, but they're not wrong for being excited, right? I mean, like, these are things, it's teams that they should stomp, but they did stomp them in such a fashion that sort of like catches you by surprise, because Nebraska doesn't usually do that.
You can think of this in two ways, and this says a lot about who you are as a person. I think you can look at these two games and say, wow, okay, they took care of business, but they did it in a great way. I'm feeling really good about, you know, the way the direction of the program's going. This is great. Or you can be cynical and you can say, well, they were supposed to do that. So whatever. That tells me nothing. Which, like, take a deep breath. It's just a sport. It'll be okay. But I'm about right down the middle.
I know. I kind of feel like that's where I'm at, too, because part of me does want to just have fun and jump. Like, hey, let's just jump on this bandwagon. And like you said, Nebraska's averaging 99 points a game and holding its opponents to 60. Like,
right.
What a margin that is. Let's just jump all in. But then, you consider that you're playing Mississippi Valley State and back to reality.
It's a really good thing they've got Seton Hall, because if they had another kind of cupcake team, then I think that they would do this again and we would still not know what's going on. But the fact that they've got a good opponent, Seton Hall, on Wednesday, and we'll talk more about the Gavitt games later in the podcast, but it's just the timing of this is really nice, because in that Jeff Sagan poll, Sagarin poll, Seton Hall's 21, and they're getting votes, I think, in the AP poll, and like, they're not a bad team at all. And so you're going to have a significantly different game plan. You know, Nebraska's not going to go as deep in the bench as they, you know, have been. They played 10 guys in the first 10 minutes of both their games. So it's really good, because it's a good test early on. Right now it's everything is good in Nebraska land. Everything. Like, they're the best team in the country.
In their world.
And
in Jeff Sagan's world.
In the real world, Duke is definitely the best team in the country. But in Nebraska's world,
it felt like, I mean, going into the year, we talked a lot about this team bringing back a lot of pieces and that they'd have sort of this chemistry. And I guess we didn't know for certain that they would, but that was sort of the idea. When you bring back as many pieces as you do, one of the reasons why there's some hype around you as a team that returns veterans is because you assume that those guys will be even closer and will have a better understanding of what each other does well, and they'll be able to fix some of the flaws that maybe hindered them in the past. You know, when you think back of the team that all those players, those pieces that returned after Nebraska went to the NCAA tournament a few years back, that next year, a lot of the chemistry elements, like the intangibles that are hard to sort of measure and discuss, like you could tell, though, that it wasn't there for that team. Yeah. But this team, I know it's two games in, but it seems to have it. And to me, that, like, not having analyzed these games as in-depth as you have, I'm sure, but, like, that's something that sticks out. And to me, it's one of the reasons why they were able to blitz these teams the way they were. I mean, aside from just being way better and, you know, having the ability to press them and, and get them sped up and all that kind of stuff.
I just completely agree.
They're connected, and there's a bond there, and it shows up on the court.
Yeah, I completely agree, and it's a really good point, because I talked to Glenn Watson today a little bit about that in terms of, you know, we were getting into the nitty-gritty of Nebraska generally is just runs motion on offense, so it's just kind of run around and figure something out.
Yeah, like read each other and read the defense.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, that just didn't look pretty at all, especially kind of that year when it was just Turan would shoot a shot with, like, 2 seconds on the shot clock, and it was like, this just gross. And so what they're doing now is they're kind of mixing in sets within their motion offense. And so we were getting, I won't get into the nitty-gritty of that because it's not incredibly compelling, but what I took away from talking to Glenn about it was he has a really good understanding, I think, of when they need to go into a set, when they need to go into just motion, who's hot, who they need to feed, who needs to maybe run point for a little bit. Like, maybe we need Isaiah Roby to run this set or whatever. And it's really interesting because he's the eyes and ears of Tim on the court. And he seems to be able to read everybody really well on and off the court. Like, he knows when he should say something to James and when he should not. And whenever he comes off the bench, what he should say to who. And the chemistry with the starting five is excellent. I think whenever you throw in some guys off the bench, it's just not quite there yet. And that's just because they're young or they're inexperienced. But whenever you have the four guys, the four main guys, and Thomas Allen, who honestly has played extremely well. Like, he fits his role really well. He's shooting okay. Like, he fits into that core four. Yeah. Like, it makes sense. And so the chemistry is totally there. And again, this is only two games in, but they understand each other. They're crazy, crazy focused, like, to a degree where, like, Tim Miles has mentioned it a couple times, where after the first game he said they're kind of almost too casual about, like, wins and whatnot. Like, they're almost too reserved. But
so by focus, you almost mean, like, they're focused on, like, the end goal almost. Like,
they're so like, this isn't, why would we celebrate a win over Mississippi Valley State ever? Like, we haven't won the tournament yet. Who cares? So
that's a good sort of mentality to have, especially for a team that's, I'm sure, going to have more success and going to get more praise, not just locally, but nationally over the course of the year, to, like, stay grounded and our goals are not achieved yet.
Right.
That's important, I think.
Yeah. And I think that, just in general, like, things are moving in a better direction than I think a lot of people would have thought coming into the season. I think people were a little worried going into the season. Practices were getting kind of stale. James didn't look all that good. And then, you know, James putting up 17 a game. Glenn is, you know, Nebraska's up like 45 and Glenn Watson dives through the air and, like, puts in a tip back and lands on the ground. Like, could have gotten seriously injured, but he's just going all out at 45, and Tim immediately took him out and was like, "Hey, man, I don't know if we need that."
But the fans love
that. Yeah, exactly. And so they're playing at a high level, and Seton Hall, I think, is going to be a good early test for that.
So I don't have Nebraska ranked in my AP Top 25 ballot. How many people ranked them this week?
I think it was 7 or 8.
Okay.
There was one at 17, one at 21, I think 3 at 22, and then 24, 25.
But they're inching there. I mean,
they're
I think I had Nebraska, because I always rank out pretty far past the 25, so I had them at 36 in the preseason, and then now I have them, I don't know, 30, 29 or 30. Mm-hmm. I mean,
do you just need to see them play a good team?
Yeah, but also, like, a lot, I need to see them play a lot of teams. I don't know. It's weird because once the season, as a voter, like, once the season gets going, a lot of times you do find yourself getting into a rhythm as, like, well, these teams lost, so they're obviously going to drop, and these teams won, they're going to rise. But in the preseason, and even throughout November, like, I don't really feel as compelled to boost somebody because they won or drop them because they lost. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's how it worked out this week, just because of the, you know, there was only a few teams that actually played anyone notable, but just trying to figure out how Nebraska compares to the rest of the country,
yeah.
The rest of the top teams. So I do need more of a sample size of them competing against teams that I'm trying to compare them against.
Sure.
Right?
So you need them to play, which is, again, it's good for Nebraska, because you need them to play Seton Hall. Then you need them to go to Kansas City and play a couple of Division One teams.
Exactly.
You need them to play Creighton and Oklahoma State. Just see where they actually fit among those people.
Yeah, I never really even feel comfortable that I have a good read on teams until January.
Sure.
So, I mean, last year I was one of the many AP voters who was ranking Arizona State like second in the country, and then they barely made the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So it's the early season can be tricky to try to get a gauge on teams. But yeah, I just want to see a little bit more. Because my concern, it's like, as impressive as Nebraska has been in two games, like, my concerns are still there. Are they going to shoot it well enough? Are they going to grab defensive rebounds? And is the depth there? I think that hasn't been answered
yet.
Those
are all still questions.
Right.
And like, nothing has been answered, really.
We won't know those. Probably won't even know them after Seton Hall, but we'll have a better idea anyway in that matchup. We'll talk more about that in a second, but let's transition to Creighton because the Jays
definitely.
Also...
They played two games,
opened their season, probably tighter margin than they would have liked. Western Illinois was in that game at halftime. It was tied up, or maybe Creighton was up by one at halftime, and it took the Jays till the middle of the second half to pull away, and then East Tennessee State...
Give them all they could take.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't even know. Like, if you put this Creighton team in a scenario, like, if you replay that game 10 times and Creighton is down 12 with 8 minutes left, I think they only win one.
Really?
One out of the 10. I mean, to be down 12 with 8 minutes left, what Creighton had to do to win that game was it had to score on 12 of its final 13 possessions and make its final 9 shots. So,
and they did?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh,
no, that's
really?
What they did.
Yeah.
So that is what it took to win that. I mean, and they won it. In the end, they won it fairly handily because they really weren't under a ton of pressure in the final 2 minutes because they had, I think they had they had the lead, basically.
Yeah.
And at one point, they had a 2-possession lead after being down 12, which is kind of incredible. But so maybe they didn't need to go to that extreme to where they were just almost perfect offensively.
Yeah.
But I mean, anything less than that, it's hard to envision them finding a way to win that game. So
what do you attribute that game to? Because there was the first one where, like, you can say, okay, jitters, first game, takes a while to get going, whatever. But that second game, you know, I think it was close at halftime.
Well, one thing I will say about that game is just that it was going to be tough regardless, even if Creighton, even for last year's team, that they wouldn't have been down 12 with 8 minutes left. But the style of play that ETSU has, they are really physical. They crash the glass, and they defensively, they'll extend their defense out to the three-point line. They'll deny passes along the perimeter and really kind of, Those elements of what they're good at is what Creighton struggles with. So from a stylistic standpoint, it's not a great matchup. Now, with that said, Creighton's a team that should be able to handle that. So, but I think going into it, I kind of knew that this one might be tough for Creighton to settle in in this game, and it was. But I have two concerns for the Jays. I think the one thing that was notable after watching Sunday, and then when I kind of thought back to the Tuesday season opener, it stood out in that one too, was they just haven't been able to establish their pace. They are, the last 2 years, they were so good at blitzing these under-talented, overmatched teams in the non-conference. I think they won their non-conference games by 23 points per game. You know, they scored 93 points a game in those games over the last 2 years, and it was largely because they just overwhelmed them with offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you keep Coach McDermott after the game kind of compared it to a snowball rolling down a hill. Like, the more you run and, you know, you catch the ball off the glass and you go over and over again, maybe in the first 10 minutes that team's, because they prepared for it, they're mentally engaged and locked in, and you don't see the immediate rewards from that.
Right.
The fact that you're on the attack, ready to score when the shot clock's at 25, maybe that means maybe in the first 10 minutes of the game, you don't actually even get a look. But in the final 10 minutes of the game, or maybe even after halftime, the idea is that if you're continually on the attack, sprinting down court, eventually that team's going to, they're either going to lose focus or lose energy.
Right.
Because it's just hard to be disciplined enough to get back in transition over and over again. And so now ETSU, I feel like they had a good plan. They drilled it in their guys to get back. But still, I think that Creighton has done over the last two years, especially when they've kind of had this offense rolling, they've been able to find a way to at least hit somebody with a surge. And it's been because of their pace. They did get a surge late in that game against ETSU, but it wasn't a result of pace. It was more just they found a way to make plays in the half court and make shots.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might have been one or two buckets during that stretch that they got quick. But for the most part, it was dissecting the defense, making the extra pass, making that defense move, and then finally finding an open look and knocking it down. Instead of, and what has been the case in many other games against non-conference teams over the last 2 years, they just eventually just wipe them off the floor because
right.
they're just moving too fast for them to handle. So that's the one thing was pace. And I do think they can get better
gonna,
at that.
They're gonna still try and run, right?
Oh, for sure.
Like,
yeah.
They're not stopping. They're not going to be like, all right, we're a half-court team now.
No, that's their identity,
right.
And they practice it all off-season. So, I mean, I think what Coach McDermott was saying was just they – got to be more committed to sprinting as soon as the possession starts.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you get the board or as soon as you pull it out of the net, just go. And even if it doesn't result in anything for the first 10 to 15 possessions, don't get disheartened. Just keep doing it. And I think one of the things he pointed out was this team and it being young and inexperienced, maybe it's not too much of a surprise, but like he thought that when ETSU was making shots and Creighton wasn't, or Creighton was turning it over and the game was kind of clunky because both teams really couldn't find a flow offensively, that maybe sapped Creighton of some of its energy and that willingness to really put it on them, to have that be in attack mode. And that can't happen. So they'll talk about it a lot in practice, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So that was concern one. And concern two was probably, or has been, just a defensive, you know, yeah, they've missed Khyree Thomas, obviously, so having guys kind of having that mentality of guarding the ball and doing it with tenacity and also just doing the little things defensively. So those are the two things.
Sure. I think those are valid, and I think that they're interesting. Like, I think that they're really interesting specifically for Creighton, because I think that if you can't find your identity and you can't run and you can't defend, that's going to be tough.
Right.
Like, you know, like if you can't, and that's one thing that Creighton's been good at is just, you know, blitzing someone enough where you can just score a little bit more, even if they can't necessarily defend. But again, it's early.
Like, exactly. Well, like, and that's the thing, when you have a team like Creighton, they're trying to figure out roles. Every single guy on their roster is in a new position.
Right.
We were talking about Nebraska. You got those four guys coming back who they are doing the same thing they did last year.
Right.
So they spent all summer just sort of living in that mentality of
right.
this is what I have to do. Whereas
yeah.
the Creighton guys, like, and granted, and I mean, on top of that, not only were those guys adjusting, but several of them were coming back off injury.
Sure.
So
and this is something that I've said and believed for a really long time, and that I actually like got it. Accidentally kind of aggressive on Evan Bland the other day about.
Whoa.
But like November basketball matters, but it also definitely doesn't. Like,
we talked about this, I think, on one of the pods.
Who you are in November is not even remotely close to who you will be in December or January or February or March. Like, you are a constant project. And that's one thing that's so vastly different than football, where football, game one, you are. you are supposed to be as good as you will be, like maintaining that. Like Bama, I don't think necessarily gets better over the year. I think there's always that good. You know, like obviously you're tweaking and you're going to do, you know, little small things here and there, but like your system and your scheme, that's who you are. Whereas in basketball, you could start out the season and, hey, we're going to man up, we're going to, you know, do whatever, but then you're bad and it's like, okay, well, we can't guard anybody. We're just going to be a zone team the rest of the year. Like we have to just completely change. Like you are constantly doing maintenance.
Well, and I think the season sort of allows you that.
Exactly, because it's so long. Yeah, it's a marathon. Season.
A lot of games. Yeah,
yeah, and people get hurt and like you go up and down against good and bad competition. And so that's one thing I think with both of these teams is, though on its surface for Nebraska, they seem kind of set, they still don't know their rotation. I don't think Miles is really sure where he wants to play Brady Hyman yet, or how much Nana Atkinson's going to play, or where Amir Harris fits into all this, or like who plays where. And so with Creighton, it's like these questions come up because they've had two games that are closer than you would think. And so they're still trying to figure things out. But even though Nebraska has like beaten the crap out of two teams by like more than 50, that doesn't mean they're more put together. You know what I mean? They're still trying to figure it out.
With that said, even though November games don't necessarily dictate the type of team you're going to be in March,
yeah,
they still matter to the committee.
Absolutely,
and they still
they do.
Contribute to setting a narrative. And Big Ten fans know this. Well, Nebraska fans know it too, because they were, unfortunately, they sort of had to deal with the consequences of it. But like the Big Ten last year in November and December was not good. Mm-hmm. Aside from maybe Purdue, Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State, the rest of the league failed to get quality wins and failed to avoid, oh good God, that is awful losses.
Right.
You know,
right.
So they, wow, well, and so the challenge is while you're figuring yourself out, you also have to pick up wins. And so the Big East over the last few years, one of the reasons why it's been a top, well, it was second in the RPI as a league last year, and it's been top three or top four since its reconstruction 5 years ago. One of the reasons why it's been up there is because it's found a way to take care of business in non-conference. And I think it's a big challenge for the league this season, because in the Big East, everyone's like it feels like every team is reloading or retooling in some form or fashion. And honestly, in the Big Ten, there's a lot of teams that are doing that as well.
Yeah.
So that's what, to me, makes this week really interesting.
Yeah.
They're going to do the annual Gavitt Games, which is it's only eight games, so only eight teams from each league, but the Big Ten and the Big East have gone to battle. This is the fourth year they've done it. So
there's only eight games, and they still picked Rutgers to play in it?
No. Well, you know what? Big Ten hasn't sent Michigan State to be part of this yet, and I think it's because the Champions Classic usually has happened around this time,
yeah.
So they've avoided that. But, yeah, I mean, it's still kind of fun. You know, I'd probably like to see more high, like, top-tier teams involved, but you get eight matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, each year, the event has been, it's tied 4-4.
Really?
Big Ten's 1-4, Big East is 1-4, 3 years in a row.
Hmm.
It's probably going to happen again.
Yeah, I think yeah.
I mean, when I'm looking at the lineup of these games, they seem pretty even. I can see a scenario. Maybe I don't really see Rutgers beating St. John's, but who knows? Rutgers upset Seton Hall last year, mm-hmm, in like a rivalry-type game. You know that it's going to be a fun atmosphere. I'm sure it will be, so... and I don't know. I feel like Villanova should handle Michigan, but
like Georgetown, like here's the thing. Okay, here are the matchups. Georgetown, Illinois, who like, I don't know. That seems like a toss up to me, because I think Illinois might be a little better this year. Xavier, Wisconsin, both teams who are kind of picking up the pieces a little bit, like maybe a little bit better than they were last year.
I don't know about Xavier.
Excuse me. Wisconsin is better than they were last year.
They should, because they're all those injuries.
Right. And Xavier is kind of retooling,
yeah,
rebuilding. So that's interesting of like kind of the shift of power.
Right. Is it going to shift enough to where Wisconsin can win that game on the road?
Villanova, Michigan's the big one. That's fun. That's fun. Like those are two teams that I would watch for sure if they're on TV. Like that game's going to be in the 90s.
You would think so? Well, I would think. I mean, Michigan... The one thing about their team last year is they couldn't really score with consistency. They were like defensive oriented last year, that Michigan team was.
Yeah.
So maybe they've, I mean, I've watched. I just saw that they were down at half. They scored 18 points, I think, in one of Michigan.
Did they really?
Yeah. What game was that? Who were they playing last week? And they, I mean, they won because it's Michigan. But gosh, I guess my point is that I would assume that if Michigan's gonna beat Villanova, it's gonna have to score.
Right. That's what.
Because I don't think you can anticipate holding Nova down. But
Yeah, when you play Villanova, it's like damage control, basically.
A lot of times.
But skipping the Nebraska one, Marquette and Indiana play.
Another fun one. That one feels like it'll be in the 90s for sure.
Yeah. Romeo Langford might be the real deal. I think he's not Zion Williamson, but he's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, there was a good story on The Athletic about from their Indiana writer about kind of his opening night, and he struggled early on, but then just kind of took over. And so I picked him to be the Big Ten Freshman of the Year.
Holy Cross, by the way, Michigan was down 24-18 against Holy Cross.
Oh my gosh, at halftime.
Speaking of struggle early, that's why you can't go too overboard over the first week because they were down 24-18. They outscored them 38-13 in the second half, but again, it's just one half in the first week of basketball.
Yeah. But still, they were still down.
Yeah, right. So I'm sure there's Michigan fans wondering what is going on. But they did lose their top three scorers from a year ago, and. And that team wasn't as elite as they have been, but they've got a really good coach. So anyway, Marquette and Indiana is going to be fun. DePaul, Penn State.
Yeah, I wouldn't need to watch that one.
Yeah.
do you want to do Ohio State Creighton first, or do you want to do Nebraska Seton Hall first?
Let's preview Ohio State Creighton. It's interesting for a couple reasons, just on a broad sense. Mm-hmm. One, Ohio State quarter Creighton's coach Greg McDermott. Last summer.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
So they
beautiful.
Reportedly interviewed him and offered him, they interviewed him. It was kind of disputed over whether or not they offered him the job. So that happened. They hired Chris Holtman, who was at Butler, and obviously a lot of Creighton fans know Chris Holtman well, and actually Greg McDermott had some decent success against Chris Holtman over the last two seasons. So there's that storyline. I think both teams are in that retooling mode. Ohio State lost three of its top players, including Kata Bates-Diop, who was incredibly good last year, and Creighton obviously lost its pieces that we've talked about a ton. So, but here's the thing. Ohio State seems to be seems to have the new guys that are part of this team. I mean, I know it's just one game, but they seem to have stepped into their roles and bought into their identity faster than Creighton. Because, they just went to Cincinnati and won.
Right.
And they won a game that was ugly. I think Cincinnati shot here's a stat. Cincinnati missed 25 of its first 29 shots.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
Yeah.
You're going to win zero games if you do that.
Yeah. Well, they actually weren't even out of it, which is
crazy.
Man,
that's nuts.
So Ohio State was they're going to grind it out. Mm-hmm. And those are teams that Creighton struggled with. And they seem to be kind of bought into that. Hey, we're just going to have to be a defensive-oriented team that finds a way to score and pester you enough for us to build a lead, and then we'll hang on in the end.
Yeah.
So it is a good
big picture.
The other thing about it, too, is both teams kind of going into the year, they felt like they were – NCAA tournament possible team, there's a chance, but most likely they're on the wrong side of the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
But for them to get on the right side, a game like Thursday is important.
For both teams, for both programs.
Because
you
put it on your resume and then it looks good in March.
And Ohio State's such a weird program because I feel like they view themselves as kind of like a blue blood of we should be in the discussion of winning the Big Ten every single year. But they're really not. I mean, occasionally when they've got Aaron Kraft in a couple pieces, or they have Greg Oden in a couple pieces. But it's interesting that program in general, because I don't think that they're as good as they view themselves.
Well, it's always hard to judge that program because it's a football school.
Right.
But then again, they put, like you said, they had that Oden, Mike Conley team that when then they make it to the final game. I mean, they were...
I mean, they got close. I mean, I think they made a big run. Yeah, and I think they won the Big Ten that year. So, they've got pieces, but...
Evan Turner back in the day?
Yeah.
Not even back in the day. It was 5 years ago.
A couple years ago? Yeah. But yeah. That's a fun one.
All right, Seton Hall, Nebraska.
Yeah.
How are you? How do you gauge this matchup? What's important for Nebraska in this one?
So it's hard because Seton Hall's just played one game, and I haven't gone. I haven't looked super in depth on Seton Hall, but they do like. The thing that's interesting about this game is that they are so much better than the two teams Nebraska has just played. Yeah. Like, they're so much better. They're a complete team. They probably know when they should shoot and when they shouldn't. I guarantee you they won't have as many air balls as the previous two teams.
Probably.
They've got dudes. Like, Miles Powell is a dude. They can score 30 points in their opening game. I think that he can cause a lot of problems.
He's an all-league caliber player for
definitely.
Sure.
Definitely. And the thing for Nebraska that I've been thinking about is I think that they can, because of the way that they defend, even with their bench, even the bench guys that, like, the way that they defend, they can be in every game this year. They should not, theoretically, they should be in every single game the entire season because of the way they defend. And it becomes not only the bench of, like, you know, how do they fit, chemistry, all that stuff, but, like, how do they do on the offensive end? Because I think defensively, like, I think Nanai Kenta can guard. I think Thomas Allen's come a long way. I think Brady Hyman maybe needs to put on some weight, and we'll kind of see if he how he does against Seton Hall. I think that and then Tanner Borchardt's, like, he can do everything you want him to do exactly. And so with this game, what's interesting to me is Nebraska's got to shoot well. They've shot okay. But they have to shoot well and they have to defend. And that sounds really basic, but whenever you're playing the first good team after playing two lollipops, those are things that you have to do. And those are things that, you know, especially shooting. I mean, Nebraska shot over 50% in both of their first two games, but that doesn't mean that Miles isn't, like, completely okay with the way that they're shooting.
Yeah.
Like, it's been interesting because I wrote this big old story on 3-point shooting and, like, went through all these stats of, like, college basketball shooting over 10 years. And then the next game, Nebraska shoots in the first half, they went 1-for-10 from three and they went 16-for-17 from inside the arc. And I was like, okay, well, but they do have to shoot well behind the three. They are going to take a lot more. And so this is a good example of, like, you know, can you just shoot a team out of a gym? Like, do you have that capability? And so, I don't know. I see this game as, like, Seton Hall takes a 15-5 lead in the first, like, 7 minutes, and Nebraska has to figure out how to battle back, and that's pretty much exactly what they need to actually learn.
I don't know much about Seton Hall. I think over the last few years they've been a team that, if they're engaged, can bring a level of toughness that can knock you off kilter.
Yeah.
But they started 4 seniors last year. They're all gone, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a totally different makeup. 2 of the main guys that'll be on this team are transfers. I don't know what to make of this team. Their coach, Kevin Willard, said a month ago in the preseason, like, we're not tough enough. And so that was kind of alarming because I feel like that's kind of who they are.
Right.
I mean, they're kind of a team that will grind out wins. So my assumption is that Nebraska will benefit from it's athletes, and so that level of talent is obviously going to be different. Like mm-hmm. you said, that's going to be a stark change from the start. But because Seton Hall is still trying to figure itself out, I think Nebraska should be able to be all right. Let's pick these games real quick before we get out of here.
Yeah, let's
see. Let's see which conference we think is better right now. Georgetown, Illinois. Who would you pick in that? I think I'd pick Illinois.
Yeah, I'm.
It's at Illinois.
So
it's
weird,
at Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna pick Illinois. I don't feel great.
Georgetown,
about it, but
Central Connecticut State. I think it was this weekend. It was close until the end. Now they won by like 10 at the end, but I don't know. I'm not ready to buy in on Georgetown.
That's my thing. Is like I'll take Illinois, but I just am always hesitant. Like Illinois Rutgers, no matter what the sport is, I don't feel good about picking them to win. So I'll take Illinois though.
I'll pick. Gosh. I'm going to pick Xavier to beat Wisconsin.
See, I'm going to take Wisconsin.
Okay.
That's going to be a good game, though, because I think Wisconsin might secretly be better than we think. They were just so bad last year that you don't know. I don't know how much you could trust them.
Xavier is another Big East team that they lost their top three players, so who knows? They haven't looked great so far either, but they also have it. They are like that type of team, and they lost their coach, by the way. But they're kind of that team at home early in the year. They might be able to find a way to pull something out.
Yeah.
They have a lot of athletes. See, Xavier is a team that I wish that Nebraska was playing. Cause like,
yeah, that'd be fun.
I know a little bit more about what Xavier has and what Seton Hall has, and I could gauge it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is where Nebraska's at. So
yeah,
that's just my own personal thing. All right, so Nova, Michigan.
I'll take Villanova.
Yeah, me too. Seton Hall, Nebraska.
I'll take Nebraska.
Same here. Marquette, Indiana.
I'm going to take Indiana. It's in Bloomington. Romeo Langford goes for like 30. And then they start his Heisman campaign, which also like a Naismith campaign, whatever you want to call it. But he's going to become last year during every week in college basketball, we got like 6 push alerts because of Trae Young.
Yes.
And currently that's Zion Williamson. We're going to get like 6 or 7 of them a week, maybe 100 because it's freaking Duke. But Romeo Langford, if he plays well in this game and they start to kind of build the Indiana Romeo Langford thing, yeah, we might get some push notifications on him.
The Indiana hype, when it gets going, I mean, they definitely make national headlines. I'm going to pick Indiana, too. I don't know if Marquette's ready for this stage yet. They just jumped into the polls for the first time this year. You know, like, they have a lot of hype going into the season, but I think, and they're bringing back a lot of pieces, but I don't know. They got to defend somebody, and they haven't done that in, like, 5 years. Creighton, Ohio State. By the way, I'm picking Indiana to win that game. Creighton, Ohio State. I'm picking Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Ohio State, too. I have a lot of questions about Creighton.
DePaul, Penn State.
You know,
what's Penn State even been up to this year?
I mean, they won the NIT last year, but then they were picked to finish like near the bottom of the Big Ten this year. So, like, I don't know. It's
at DePaul, but that doesn't usually mean much.
Yeah, I picked Penn State, I think, to finish like, I think maybe 10th or 11th in the Big Ten, but DePaul doesn't ever do much for me. I'll take Penn State. I'll take Penn State based on me knowing nothing
about
DePaul.
Penn State beat North Florida by 15 in week one. Gosh. I'm going to go with Penn State. Penn State. Sure. I don't know. I honestly do not know what's going to happen there, but Penn State's been more successful over the last few years than DePaul, so I'll give it to Penn State. Even though DePaul is returning some players, it's going to be marginally better than the worst team in the Big East that it's been the last few years. Final game, St. John's Rutgers. Who you got?
Based off of principle, I pick against Rutgers, so I'll take St. John's.
Yeah. So you ended up going, you said that the Big Ten's going to go 6-2. I got the Big Ten going 5-3.
I think Big Ten's in a good spot this year.
It seems like we've said this before, the middle's good. Yeah, the middle's good.
I think there are two ranked teams right now. I think it's Michigan State and Michigan.
Yeah, is Indiana not ranked? Purdue is ranked.
So there's three ranked, and then there's Nebraska, Indiana, and then there's
Ohio State.
There's a couple that are receiving votes. Wisconsin's receiving votes.
Yeah. Maryland.
Maryland is receiving votes.
Yeah, that's 8 teams right there.
They're not great. They're not top heavy, but the middle is very good. Yeah. Middle is very good.
All right, if Nebraska and Creighton played today, we'll finish the podcast like we always do. Who do you got?
I got Nebraska by like 20.
Wow. I definitely got Nebraska. I'm probably about 20. But Nebraska right now looks like it's locked in, and Creighton's still figuring things out, so I got Nebraska. Chris, thanks for your time once again. We'll be back here next week to break down the gap of games and preview what else is next.